You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning. Before we get into today's show, just want to let you know about some Cavs news that is going on right now. On Tuesday, Shams Charania of The Athletic reported that the Miami Heat are one of the teams interested in trading with the Cavs to get J.R. Smith's contract. No real details now on what that could return. The Heat pick 13th in this draft, so theoretically you could get something like James Johnson and that pick for 26 and J.R. Smith. I think that would be the best kind of case scenario for these kind of deals. Now, I am skeptical that one of these teams will necessarily want to do that. I think as we learn more about this, we'll see what the market's really like. But if you look at teams like Charlotte, that could be paying Kemba Walker a lot of money here soon. Teams like the Minnesota Timberwolves who could get off money. Teams like the Heat that are capped out. Why would they get rid of a cost-controlled rookie player that they can bring in, develop, and have, again, as cost-controlled labor, making less than $4 million for the next couple seasons? I don't know if they're going to give that up to get off of salary that expires in a year or two anyway. We'll see what this all sort of shakes out, but I think the Heat logically are a pretty ideal trade partner for the Cavs. I wouldn't take back anything they want to send back, but I think there is stuff there to like. We'll see where that story goes. I do think JR is not as obviously is done playing with the Cavs at this point in time, but we'll see when he actually does end up moving on. But today's show is all about Cam Reddish with Trevor Magnotti. We'll be back tomorrow talking about offensive flow under John Beilein, and I'll be talking about the different expiring contracts the Cavs have as we get into the offseason and potentially using those on draft night as well. But without further ado, here's Trevor and I, and thanks for listening. Check out the new Himalaya podcast app if you haven't already. It's a great app. You can get that wherever you get your apps, Apple App Store, Google Play, wherever. Check that out. It's great. I highly, highly recommend it. But without further ado, again, me and Trevor Magnotti on Cam Reddish. Welcome back to Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning from FearTheStore.com. Joining me for our ever-occurring draft check-ins is Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword and the step-back host of the Thick Jack Frames podcast. Trevor, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. Happy to be here.
We're here today to talk. No, you're not happy to be here to talk to me about this prospect.
I'm feeling better, okay? I'm feeling much better than I was on the last episode.
That's fair. Okay, so today's show is all about Cam Reddish, the Duke prospect, a link to the Cavs, the current mock in ESPN, which, Trevor, you can tell him this better than me, I would just assume, but historically has some pretty good intel. The key does not go to the Cavs in that current mock. For the Cavs, it right now in that mock from Jonathan Givony, it is DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. Cam Reddish goes 8 in this mock. But let's start, Trevor, with this. The first thing about Cam Reddish right now is that he has an abdominal injury that is going to probably cause him to miss summer league, it seems like. Does that impact, you know, his evaluation? Before we get into, like, the pros and cons of him and all that, does that affect what you would think of Reddish and how you might evaluate picking him in this draft?
Not really. I think that, like, it definitely was interesting to hear come out because, like, on one hand, you could definitely see how that might have contributed to his, like, historically poor finishing numbers. Is like if he had zero core strength for most of the year, that would make a lot of sense. But also, like, I kind of am skeptical of the timing of it, because we don't know how long it was going on for, how long it was an issue, and how long he was playing through it with. And I think that it's definitely something that, like, is an easy fix and is not, like, a long-term concern any more than his core strength, which already looked pretty bad. But I think that that's still an issue for him. It was before, and it still will remain one. I don't think that this really changes that or makes me like more worried, because it's hard to be more worried about his core strength with his finishing numbers the way that they were. I just found this very humorous, because normally like it was him, and then Ja Morant had his injury thing come out, and then there have been like a couple other things like injury related like in this combine process, and it's just funny to see like how, you know, agents historically try to withhold medical information and try to kind of direct where that goes. And then this year you get this historically weak draft, and suddenly all the agents are making it all too clear to all the media that all of their suspect clients are definitely dealing with injuries. Oh, Romeo Langford, that was the other one, with his thumb injury through the whole year that definitely could explain 27% shooting from three. It's just all of these guys like suddenly coming out, making it very apparent that their performance was actually limited by injuries and making it very public. Just very humorous to me, given what we've seen in the past with medical information.
Yeah, that's it's fair. Draft season gets a little bit leaky.
We are silly season.
I said this in the last show. I have like no idea. I have no idea how NBA, NFL draft people do this all year.
Yeah.
That's just a fact for me. Okay. Let's start here with Reddish. From where he was at the beginning of the year to where he is now as a prospect, what has changed that has really like made him just, I don't think this is like a full-on public discourse thing with him, but in NBA Twitter, he just has like a lot of negative connotation around when you bring up Cam Reddish. So what has changed with him from where he was coming into Duke to where he is now?
Well, I think the big thing is that he really was billed as like a primary initiator type. I mean, we were having conversations at the beginning of the year of who was going to be the one marginalized at Duke between the three of Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, and Cam Reddish. And there was legitimate talk that there was a possibility that it was going to be Zion who was the one who was marginalized, because he wasn't perceived as the type of creator and handler that Reddish and Barrett were. And we get into the college season, and Reddish, for somebody who looked so good at leveraging his strength to be able to get to the rim at the high school level, that did not translate to the college level at all. He really struggled to get to the rim, really struggled to beat guys off the dribble, because he really had a hard time breaking guys down, and then also being able to leverage his size into good positioning going towards the hoop. And that's really problematic if you really think that he is that type of guy. I mean, I will continue to harp on this, him shooting so poorly at the rim and him being so marginalized at Duke was not a function of the offense by itself and a function of being next to RJ and Zion by itself. A lot of it was because Reddish just could not score consistently inside the paint. And he combined some really bad shot selection with some really questionable playmaking and some very, very bad touch around the rim. And when you put all those things together, it's really hard to project him being any sort of ball dominant player in the NBA, because not only does he have to kind of re-tap into that high school level of play, like he has to elevate himself from that. And it looks like he took a significant step backwards from there. So even if he is better than he really looked, either because of the core injury or because of role and fit or whatever, like I still don't think that he has enough to really be able to translate right away as a finisher, and he's going to have some significant growing pains. Like, he is the guy that I am betting on, regardless of where he goes, I am betting on that he is the one that's going to have the Kevin Knox season next year, where he is just an abject disaster for most of the season, just because I think that his fundamental finishing touch and decision-making with the ball is so far behind even like the rudimentary ball handlers in this class.
That makes sense. How much? What of that is part is because of the offense that Krzyzewski runs, or is it more on just the, for whatever reason, Reddish lost out to Zion and RJ Barrett, and the you know and his name is escaping right now, but the point guard that Duke had that's pretty solid as well.
Yeah, having three ball handlers in Trey Jones, Zion Williamson, and RJ Barrett, you know, it limited the possessions that Reddish could take. But I think the big thing that you can point to as like it was not just RJ and Zion and Trey is Zion missed a huge portion of the season. And RJ Barrett looked significantly better during that portion of the season. And Cam Reddish arguably looked worse during those games because he was getting more of that on-ball featured role, and he turned the ball over a ton in those games, put up good scoring numbers and was able to get some productive games statistically, but just time and again bad decisions, missing passes, and just turning the ball over because he could not break down even like your run-of-the-mill ACC perimeter defender. And again, how is that going to translate against better athletes and against schemes that are going to welcome him into those situations and are going to want him to be in those situations where he made so many mistakes last year?
So when you look at Reddish, when you look at sort of what his like template, if he's not that ball creating type, if he's not the initiator type that we thought he might be coming into college, is like the best version of him now just going to be like a three, like if he works out, he's a 3-and-D player? Like, is that what like he sort of is now if he works on? If not, he is just like a Kevin Knox type, which like I don't think a Kevin Knox will end up being totally useless, but like again, like you said, not a great rookie year for Kevin Knox. So what is the archetype for Reddish now if it's not what we thought it was a year ago?
Yeah, I think you kind of look at him as maybe like a kind of the same way that Jarrett Culver and DeAndre Hunter, you would look at them, where he's kind of like this 3-and-D plus guy, where you're kind of hoping that he's a volume 3-point shooter because he shot pretty well on volume at Duke, and you kind of hope that the ball handling gets to the point where, you know, he can, he's never going to be like your kind of bring the ball up the floor guy, and I don't think he can even get to being like a Chris Middleton type in terms of ball handling, but where like he offers some value, like attacking spot up opportunities and maybe creating out of like dribble handoffs or something like that, where he can utilize his shooting threat to be able to create a little bit of space. And then you're banking on him having significant defensive value, which I think he definitely could have. I don't think that it's all doom and gloom with Reddish. I mean, he's not a guy, he's not like in the 20s for me after being my number 3 prospect to begin the year or anything. I still think that he has significant upside on the defensive end because of his frame, because of his switchability, and because of his hands. But I think that like offensively, you really have to kind of scale back what your expectations are for him.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more Locked On Cavs. Just so you know, today's podcast is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip, but book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. And today's show is also brought to you by Grip 6. These are ultra-lightweight belts with no holes, no flap, and it's a great Father's Day gift. So go to Grip 6 today, and they have a special offer for you at grip6.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E. We're going to be right back. And we are back. Trevor Magnotti, Fear the Sword, Step Back Draft Expert here. Okay, let's look at Cam Reddish and to compare him to two names that you mentioned, two names that are linked a lot to the Cavs, two names that I would say, Pete, we've said this a bunch on the show, that those are our two top guys for the Cavs at 5, the two best fits in this draft, class. That's Jarrett Culver and DeAndre Hunter, one from Texas Tech, one from Virginia. Currently, Hunter is in that ESPN mock, going to the Cavs with Culver going 6, Reddish again going 8 to Atlanta. Trevor, to me, from someone who's doing my like a binge on these guys and maybe doesn't know them as well, what strikes me about both of those guys as sort of a connector to them and how they differ from Reddish is that both seem to just sort of know a little, just like seem just a little more like sure of themselves in their game, just seem a little more confidence, a little more pep in that regard. And these are guys that seem like they're just what maybe Hunter doesn't have a ton of valuable potential. But you look at Culver in terms of the same type of archetype. Like, he's the guy that looks like he's actually going to be a creator if things were got for him correctly. And even if they don't, and he's like a third creator, like it seems like that's more likely than Reddish ever kind of figuring that out. Is that right or wrong?
Yeah, I definitely think that that's the case. And I mean, you do have to remember that these two guys are a little bit older and we would expect them to look a little bit better at this point. But I think just when you look at kind of what they do on the college basketball floor, like Hunter of the three definitely looks like he's the guy that knows the best what he's good at and like plays within himself to the highest degree of these guys, where Reddish really doesn't do that at all. And I think that Hunter is like, he's nothing else if not very kind of methodical in kind of understanding, like, this is what I have to do to contribute to my offense. These are the reads that I can make. So these are the reads that I'm going to make. And this is what I'm going to do. Whereas Culver, I think he has a little bit more upside, in part because he plays like he knows what he needs to be good at the next level and to be good for his team. Like, yeah, he didn't always shoot the best. He definitely does not have the best pull-up jumper, but he knows he was the best primary creator option for Texas Tech for most of the season. And he knows that his future in the NBA is probably going to be as that type of initiator type. And he wants to get there. And he already he's already working on the skills that are going to get him there, I think, in a productive way. And I think that that's kind of the big separator for me, is that self-awareness is a really valuable thing for young guys like this who are going to come into the league and are going to see their roles reduced. And I think that that's something that kind of holds me back from Reddish, is this is a guy that did not seem happy with his role at Duke. Well, what does he think that his role is going to be for the next 2 years on whatever NBA team drafts him?
So how do you think he would fit in a Beeline offense? That the through line of what we think we know about Beeline's offense is that it's designed to move the ball, it's designed to empower guys, to get guys in optimal situations where they're not going to have to do everything on their own. So if that's like the vibe that he's going to come into, let's say just the Cavs draft him at 5. Let's say he comes in and it's him, Sexton, Love, and Osman is sort of the four guys with the ball in their hands a lot. Does like being in an offense that isn't designed around like one guy necessarily, that is designed around empowerment and ball movement and flow, does that help Reddish in a way? Like, and maybe make like, can you see the logic and maybe that brings the best out of him to some degree?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I definitely think that that puts him in a great spot to leverage his shooting, because he's going to have a ton more space to be able to get shots off. And he's going to have a lot more, I think, potential gravity as a shooter in this type of offense than he did in the Duke offense. So I think that that's a point for him. And, you know, I think that that type of offense would definitely make life as easy as it possibly could be for Reddish to get those open looks at the rim that he really needs to be able to contribute some value. So, you know, I think that while it's not like a perfect fit, I would much rather see like Cam Reddish in Atlanta is the best case scenario for Cam Reddish, because being in like a high functioning kind of high pace offense where you have other players on the floor with significant shooting gravity, like, and he's your third best shooting threat, like, is infinitely better than putting him on
like, say, the Knicks, whatever they're going to look like, or the Bulls offense, where it's kind of your turn, my turn. And I would definitely put it ahead of the Cavs, too, although I think that that's a better scenario than most. So I think that while it would be good for him, it still doesn't solve the problems of, like, what do you want him to be and how do you make him functional in what you want him to be? Because I don't think that you're drafting Cam Reddish at fifth to be like your second biggest spot up shooting threat on the wing.
How does he fit with how does he fit with Sexton?
Poorly.
Yeah.
That kind of worries me a little bit too, because it's the, like, there are problems with kind of deference within the Cavs backcourt. When you put Colin Sexton and Jordan Clarkson together,
Buddy, I would people that have listened to me or followed me on Twitter or like read me, like, know I have like aesthetic preferences in basketball. I think a lot of us do. Reddish, Clarkson, Sexton would make my eyes bleed.
Yeah. Like, you couldn't put those three on the floor at the same time.
Larry Drew 100% would have done it. I like respect the crap out of Larry Drew. He would have done it.
Yeah. Those three and Marquise Chris and Ante Zizic, and it would have been great.
Oh my Lord.
But I think that that's kind of an issue hanging over all this too, is the fit with Sexton and having a point guard who is not great at setting the table for the rest of his teammates. Little bit worrisome. Much better situation putting him next to like Trae Young, obviously, putting him next to like the best point guard in last year's rookie class is probably more optimal. But I don't think that's a very good situation either. Just in terms of like you're wedding those two guys together, and there's going to be some fundamental issues unless Reddish has a complete epiphany and suddenly transforms into Klay Thompson.
Which, you know, doesn't seem totally likely. Okay, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back to just talk about where Reddish would rank on our respective personal likely big boards for the Cavs. And if you aren't already, though, make sure to check out the new Himalaya podcast app. This is a free, super easy-to-use app. They have every single podcast you love or are searching for. They have great personally curated playlists, themed collections of different shows to help you find that next great podcast you want to listen to. You can follow your favorite shows and creators. You can like and comment on individual episodes. They have great shareable playlists. You can build playlists by episode, customize it just like a playlist for songs, share it through social media, text, and email. So today, go find and download on the App Store the Himalaya app in the App Store or the Google Play Store. And don't forget to follow Locked On Cavs once you are there. We'll be right back. All right, Trevor, where's Cam on your Cavs-specific board? Let's just – we sort of, I think that it's going to go Zion, Ja, RJ. The Lakers at four are a wild card. It's the Darius Garland thing has been there a bunch. They could trade it. It could be Jarrett Culver. Could be Cam Reddish for all we know. But where would – of the guys you sort of think are actually going to be there, where would he be on that board for you?
So I had him at – I had him at number six, with the caveat of I threw Bol Bol at number five just because I think that he's a good fit for the Cavs, but they're not going to be taking him at five, realistically. So I think that functionally Reddish is probably five behind Hunter, Culver, Clark, and Coby White.
So what is the, considering like the Cavs, you know, like there's a profile of those guys, right? Like the two wings, we have Coby White is a guard. Brandon Clark is like, tell me if I'm wrong, like, is like a 4-5 type, like could be like an undersized five if in certain lineups and play that role pretty well. What is it about Reddish as a prospect that, is there something we haven't had that would indicate like why there's that, like, I think you and I have talked about the secondary creation, shooting, defense, those are the needs the Cavs have. Considering like he has the potential to be that, what is it about him that is so concerning or whatever that makes him fall behind below it seems the two other wings in terms of Culver and Hunter?
Well, I just think it's kind of what we talked about earlier with like the buy-in and the like realistic likelihood that he's going to achieve all of those things at like a passable level. Because like on the surface of things, yeah, he fits all three. Like if he can turn himself into an adequate ball handler, he can probably be a secondary handler. He's going to be a good 3-point shooter, at least passably, and he's going to be a good to potentially great defensive player. So I think that like all of those things kind of fit together, but it's a real question of does he really buy into kind of what his realistic role is going to be for this team, or is he going to come in and expect to be, and are the Cavs going to expect him to be like 1A to Colin Sexton and Kevin Love? Because it's a completely different conversation if that's the case versus kind of what his actual like functional role should be, which is kind of like off-ball spot-up shooter who attacks in certain situations when he has optimal playmaking space and is utilized as like a really talented switch defender. And it's just that mental leap of like, I expect Jarrett Culver to come in and be able to contribute in a functional NBA role right away, whatever that is. I expect DeAndre Hunter to be able to bring value in an NBA role, whatever that is. And the Cavs can adapt what that role is to what they need specifically for their team and what they think that the skill set of those players is. And I feel very confident that they're going to be able to get some value out of them right away. Reddish, I think it's going to take a while to get him to the point where you're even getting that point, which is fine. I mean, he's still 19. Like there's time to be able to develop him, but like I value safety in this draft, and I've talked about it before. I value guys that I feel safe to be realistically, you look at the 2021-22 season and the guy that you take should be in your starting lineup. I feel very confident that the guys ahead of Reddish are going to be that type of player. I do not feel confident that Reddish is that type of player.
So I'll say this too about Reddish. When I think about if I want to pair a wing with Jetty Osman, and let's just say that Jetty is part of your wing rotation going forward, which I think you and I both like him. I think he's a great fit for Beeline too, by the way. Like I think that's something that I think should be kind of noted in this. I think Jetty's going to do really, really well in that offense. It should allow him to pass a lot more than we've seen him really do and not have to take like weird three-pointers. But I look at like pairing what I'd want to pair with a Jetty, and it's like a guy that can match his motor, can be probably defend the bigger guys, that can probably be just a more consistent guy. And if it's in Beeline's offense, I want another playmaker. So like the Colin Sexton issue is less a concern. That to me is like, for me, if those three guys are part of your young core, and maybe the Cav, I don't know, we don't know exactly how good Jetty's going to end up being. He's a little bit older and whatever, but like, the vibe we get off Reddish and what we seem to know about him does not seem to make like the him, Sexton, and Osman trio like to make a lot of sense. Now, I think Culver makes a lot of sense. I think if you wanted to play it super safe, I think Hunter clearly makes sense in terms of covering for the defensive deficiencies of Osman. I don't really see how Reddish like complements Jetty in a way that like makes sense. And he's not good enough for me to just be like, screw it, take him anyway.
Yeah, that's my thing is like, you have these other guys who may not have as much potential, but like also the questions just like make it easy on yourself. Like, yeah, you might be missing out. Like there might be a 5% chance that you're missing out on a potential all-star, but like take the guy that you're like 75% sure is going to be in the, like that you're like 75 to 85% sure is going to be in the league in 3 years. Whereas Reddish, like you do have an avenue where he is just like completely at the fringe of the league because of the way that his finishing is and the way that the kind of mental aspects of the games kind of weighed on his season at Duke. Like at a certain point, like you're drafting for potential, but or with Reddish, but like just make the easier decision with the guy that's more likely to provide some value for you, even if you get burned by like if you get burned in this draft missing on a star because you took the like guy that you're the guy that turns out to be pretty good, that's a win. Like that's fine. You can live with that because the guys who are going to turn into stars this year, they're probably not the guys that are going to bring this type of hype.
I think the Reddish conversation's really interesting. I'm glad. I'll just say this: I'm sure we'll get questions about him. I'm sure we'll touch on him again at some point. But I think like this is a really good place for us to leave the Cam Reddish conversation. Trevor, I'll just ask you one last final thing. If he has like one skill that is like, okay, this is like something he should just be really good at, is it his shooting or is there something else?
No, it's the switchability.
Okay.
It's the fact that like he has the physical tools and kind of shows the awareness and the communication, although it wasn't consistent, but what 19-year-old is. I think that he shows the ability to be like a dynamically versatile defender for your team. When you combine that with his steal rate, his ability to anticipate one pass away and be able to react and force those havoc situations and havoc plays that create turnovers, like his ability to do a lot of different things for you on the defensive end is probably the most underrated aspect of this draft. And I've crapped on Reddish a lot in this podcast, but he still sits on the fringes of my top 10 because he is going to be a fairly good defender with the potential upside that he is an all defense team defender at the end of the day. And I think that like, if there is one argument that I will accept for the Cavs taking Reddish, it's that you are so enticed by his defensive upside, you bring him in because that is the single thing that this team...
I think that's all fair. Find Trevor on Twitter @IllegalScreens. Trevor, thank you as always.